Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The Gemara that we will be continuing with on Daf Lamed Zayin is found six lines from the top. Mistamech v'ozil Reb Yehuda Nesia akasve de Rabbi Simloi shamei. Reb Yehuda Nesia was walking along and being supported on the shoulder, or by resting on the shoulder of Rabbi Simloi Shameh, his shamash, his assistant. Omale, Rabbi Yehuda says, Simloi, lo ho'yiso emesh bebeis ha-medrash, kishihitainu es ha-shemen. You weren't with us last night in the study hall, in the base medrash, when we officially permitted the oil of Gentiles. Omar lo, so Rabbi Simloi reacted, Biomenu, well, in our time, Tatir af es hapas. You're going to allow even the bread of Gentiles. Omar lo, Rabbi Yehuda said back, no, we're not going to allow that, because if we were to allow that, im kein korulon, they would call us, and insult us, by the term Beis Dino Sharia, the court of leniency, of permissions. Before we go further, we just want to note that this last point is what we assigned as a topic heading to this particular Gemara. And you can see that on the outside margin, the nosei, the topic heading, Rabbi Yehuda Nesia lo rotso lahatir pas shel akum. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia doesn't want to allow the Gentile bread, shelo yikore, so that he wouldn't be referred to as Beis Din Sharia, the court of leniencies. The Gemara now will demonstrate that such an insult is a possibility, as was seen in history. Disnan, the Tanaic source, you can see there's a frame around the next few lines of Gemara, and in our marking system, frames are used to denote or set apart Tanaic literature from the rest of the Gemara. So in this case, we have a Mishnah from Adius, and it says, Hayed Rabbi Yossi ben Yoezer ish Tzreda, al Ayel Kamsa Dochein. He testified that Ayel Kamsa, we will see this is discussed later in the Gemara, but it's a form of an insect that's Dochein, means Dochein. In this case, means it's allowed for eating, like we'll say kosher. This type of a type of locust that is ruled as being kosher. The al mashke beis mitbochaya dochein, and the liquids of the slaughtering site in the temple in the beis hamikdash courtyard are dochein, are tohor. Tohor. We'll see that this too is the subject of a discussion in the Gemara. And the liquids that were just referred to include blood and water, which were common liquids at the slaughter site of the Beis HaMikdash. And the al diukrav lemisam misav. And a third ruling concerning tumas mace, that one who is in contact with a mace is misav, is tome. This is very obscure. The Gemara will pay a great attention to this as well later on. But for our purposes, there are three rulings here, and the very superficial assumption right now is that these three rulings are heterim, represent leniencies. The korule Yosef Sharia, and they, after Rabbi Yossi ben Yoezer said over these three rulings, they called him Yosef the lenient one, a form of insult in most likelihood. So this is what Rabbi Yehuda answered Rabbi Simloi's suggestion that that they be matir the bread as well. So Rabbi Yehuda said, I'm not going to matir the bread. I'm not going to allow the bread of Gentiles, because then I'll be insulted. I'll be called the lenient one. Omar Lay. So Rabbi Simloi says back to Rabbi Yehuda, Hasam Shora Tlas. In the case of Yosef ben Yoezer, there were three things that were allowed. Umor shara chado. You allowed, after all, just one thing, the oil. Ve'i shari mor chado achriti. And if you allow one more thing, akati, tartin hu dahafion, still there will be a sum total of two items. And as a result of that, they wouldn't insult you. It's only when you end up allowing three things does one subject himself to that zilzal, that insult. Omar Lei, Rabbi Yehuda answers, as far as the numbers are concerned, I have news for you. He says, Ano Sharoi Achriti. I actually made an allowance for something else. In other words, there's the oil, there's this something else, and if I come to allow the bread, I too will be called a Bezdin Sharia. We have some structural notes to present. At this point in the Gemara, we see a brackets. The length of these brackets is indicated by the length indicator on the to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You'll see a vertical dash dotted line, and it's rather long. If you follow it all the way down, you'll see at the line in which the brackets closes. The note that accompanies these brackets, in other words, the explanation, you'll find to the side of the Gemara where you'll notice a double asterisk. And we've written in Toichen HaSugrayim, the content of the Sugrayim, Hainu Horeka Ladin HaNosaf Shehitir Rabbi Yehuda V'Hainu Be'inyin Gittin. The content of these this whole bracketed section is simply to give the background for that particular extra halacha, the extra area in which Rabbi Yehuda issued a leniency. That extra area is in the general realm of Gittin, of divorce. That having been said, we might want to note that after the bracketed section, the Gemara turns to a new discussion. Namely, it will refer to the issue of the Ayil Kamsa that we saw in the source where Yossi ben Yoezer issued a ruling that the Ayil Kamsa is Dochein. The Gemara will present that after this long bracketed section. Another point that we want to note by way of our markings is that the response that Rabbi Yehuda just made, namely, he says, Ano Sharoi Achriti, I allowed something else. This answer is accompanied by a long answer marking that we have on the right-hand side of the Gemara text. You'll see a tuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. In other words, we will need to learn all of these lines in order to appreciate this point that Rabbi Yehuda was matir something else. With all of those words of introduction, let us now get into the bracketed section, and we have to experience a certain mindset change, and that is we have to focus right now on a new topic, and that is one concerning divorces, gittin. The Gemara now goes on and says, Mahi, what is that extra point that Rabbi Yehuda was matir? Disnan. So there's a Mishnah in Maseches Gittin that says, Ze gitech im lo bosi mikan ad shnei moser chodesh. There's a man who presents a divorce document, a get, to his wife and announces, he says, this is your get, this will be your get, if I don't come within 12 months. So this man is on his way to take a journey, and he gives her this divorce document indicating that it will take hold if he doesn't come back within 12 months. If he comes back within 12 months, so the get is, the divorce is not going to take hold. And what happened? Umeis besof shnei moser chodesh. And this man died within the 12-month period. Eino get. The divorce is not considered a divorce. You'll say, in truth, he's not going to be coming back anymore, but he said that it would take hold only with the passage of 12 months and then his not returning. In this case, he died within the 12 months. At that point in time, now that he's dead, he can't divorce her. So you have a situation where within 12 months, when the get was not supposed to take place, he died. And therefore, she is considered an almona and not a gerusha. And as an almona, as a widow, in the case that the man and this couple left no children, but he left a brother, a surviving brother, she would be zekuka liyibum. She would be bound to yibum, which means that the surviving brother of this childless couple, the brother of the deceased, would be expected to marry her. Or if he chooses not to marry her, then they do chalitza. But for our purposes, she is considered zekuka liyibum, and she cannot marry until something is done about that yibum. Vitoni alo, and concerning this case, we have another Tanaic source that says, V'raboyseinu hitiruha linose. Another school of thought said, she is allowed to marry. She's allowed to marry lashuk. She is not yibum bound. Ve'amrinon man raboseinu, and the question was raised, who is this raboseinu that allow her to marry? Omer v'yudam ha-shmuel. Rav Yudah Mishmuel informs us who the Raboseinu is. Beis Dino de Shoru Mashcha. It's the Beis Din that allowed the Gentile oil. And that's Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, and that's the second halacha that Rabbi Yehuda Nesia is allowing. In addition to the oil, he told Rabbi Simoy, "I allowed something else," and that's this case. I allowed this case of the divorce document given with the conditions if he doesn't come back within 12 months and he died within the 12 months, I allow her to marry. That's another kula. Based on what does he allow her to marry? After all, he did die within the 12 months and you would have thought that she should be classified as a widow. Savri lo kribiyosi. This based in Deshoro Mashcha, the bezin that allowed the oil, hold like Rabbi Yossi, another Tana, the Omar. His opinion is, Zmanoi shel shtar mochiach olav. The date in a document, in this case the date in the divorce document, proves from what time the get was really activated. Now, the date that was written into the get was written in at the time of the writing, namely at the beginning of the 12-month period. The Omer Rabbi Abba, Brei de Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Rabbi Yudah Hanosi, Hoira, Veloi Hoidu Lo, Kol Shaito, Vi Amri Lo, Kol Siato. Rashi says that this Rabbi Yudah Hanosi is a reference to the grandson of Rabbi Yudah Hanosi, the famous Rabbi Yudah Hanosi. This is a grandson. He ruled that she is allowed to marry. However, the Lo hodu lo kol shaita, the Gemara says, all of the chachomim all of the other scholars that were present at that time, they didn't agree. And another version is kol amilos kol siato, all the people that were with him in the base medrash, bnei midrosho, did not agree with him. As far as our flow of Gemara is concerned right now, let's just go over the general point. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia told Rabbi Simloi, it's true that I allowed Shemen, and as far as what you are claiming that I could allow Pas, because that would only be a second allowance, and I wouldn't be threatened with the derisive title of Beis Dino Sharia. I have news for you, says Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. I did allow already, in addition to the Shemen, something else. And that something else is this issue of the divorce case that we just featured. And therefore, if I were to allow the Gentile bread, I would then subject myself to the insult of being called Beis Dino Sharia. We turn back to the Gemara. Omar Le Rabbi Elozer Lahu Sabo. Rabbi Elozer asks, Hahu Sabo was a person that was part of the Beis Din that Rabbi Yehuda presided over in allowing the woman to marry and not be Yibum bound. So Rabbi Elazar asks this man, Ki Sharisuha, when you issued the leniency and the allowance, the permission for her to marry anyone she likes, La'alter Sharisuha Dolo Asi, did you allow her to marry immediately upon the death of her husband? Oidilmo Li'achar Shneim Osir Chodesh Da'ikayim Le'Tanoi, or only at the completion of the 12 months since he left her, so that there would be a fulfillment of the condition. The condition being that if I don't come within 12 months, so we want to have a 12-month period pass during which he doesn't come, and then we can say that the condition is fulfilled. So, once again, the permission given to her to remarry. That permission, was it granted to her to remarry immediately upon his death, or that even though he died, she still would have to wait till the end of the 12-month period? That was the question. The Gemara doesn't answer that question. The Ahuv Saba doesn't answer that question, but rather the Gemara asks a question on the question, namely, why does Rabbi Elazar pose the question of Ki Sharisuha when they allowed her? Was it immediate or only after the time? Why was that posed to the Ahuv Saba? That question could have been raised on the Mishnah itself. You'll notice we have a long question marking accompanying this piece. Starting here, you see a kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. V'tiboya lo chamas nisen. Why not present your question on the Mishnah, Disnan? You have a Tanaic source that says, "Hareze gitech me'achshav im loy bosi mikan ad shneim osur chodesh." A man presents a document of divorce to his wife and tells her that this is your get from now if I do not come within 12 months. Umeis besoch shneim osur chodesh. He died within the 12 months. Umeis besoch shneim osur chodesh. Have a get, and in the event that he dies within 12 months, it is considered a get. Deha ikayim le tenoi, because there is a fulfillment of the conditions. The condition was if he doesn't show up within 12 months, the get should be a get. The document should take hold. Well, he's not showing up within 12 months, so we have a fulfillment of those conditions. V'tiboy aloch, and then you could have asked your question. In other words, Rebbe Lozer, instead of asking Ahuv Saba a few lines up, you can spot the Ahuv Saba. We gave that a diagonal dashed underline. So instead of posing your question to him regarding his participation in the Beis Din of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, you could have asked the same question right now on this Mishnah. Aleph, Oy Dilma. You'll notice a few words later we scribble on O Dilma, a transition expression, which means or maybe the second possibility, and we call it Beis. So you could have asked Aleph, La Alter Havegita, is the get immediate? Doha Lo also, because, well, he's not coming back anymore. Oy Dilma, Li Achar Yud Beis Chodesh, Doi Kayim Le Tanoi. Or is the get, does the get take effect only after 12 months, at which point you have a fulfillment of the original conditions? So the Gemara says, as far as this most recent question, the Gemara answers, in Hachinami, you're right, it is also true, I could have raised the question of when does the permission for her to remarry take place. I could have asked that on the Mishnah. The Mishnah, namely that source which is in a frame that we just learned. Elo mishum dehavis bahu minyona, but rather because the Ahuv Saba, that man was part of the court that made the ruling concerning her allowance to remarry. Since he was an actual member of the court that participated in that issue together with Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, I chose to ask someone who was really there on the front line, so to speak, as opposed to asking a more academic question or a more question posed to the Mishnah, where I wouldn't be addressing someone who was actually there. At this point in the Gemara, we encounter a new bracketed section. This, in fact, is a brackets within the wider brackets that we had before, that started before. The note on the inside margin that features these brackets, you'll see there's a star, and we've written Besocha Sograim Abaye Memakeid Be'ezo Mikre Chokin Rabbi Yehuda Hanosi V'Rabbanan. Within this bracketed section, Abaye will focus the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda Nesia and the Rabbanan on what point, on what case exactly. In other words, what was the nature of the condition concerning which we saw a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, who issued a leniency, a ruling of allowance, and the Chachomim, who said that she is not considered divorced. So what are we doing now? We're looking for a text that constitutes the nature of, or the condition that the husband made to his wife. That will preoccupy us till the end of this internal angular brackets. We also will be noting a double underline, one of our additional series markings. This is featured in the outside margin under the Mivneh, the structural note, where you see a double underline. Dugmois shoinois, different examples, shel loshon tnai beget, of expressions of conditions that may be included in a divorce. Omar Abaye, hakol modim, everyone will agree. Rashi points out, and we've written in between the lines, even Rabbi Yossi. Let us just review Shitas Rabbi Yossi before we go on in the Gemara. Rabbi Yossi says that the effectiveness of a document is based on the date that's written into the document. So even though a document may state a condition that would take hold later on, if there's a date that's written in, it's basically telling you that the document takes hold from, we'll say immediately, namely, or the point at which the document was written with its accompanying date. So what we'll see right now is that even Rabbi Yossi, who says documents can take hold immediately, even though they have some type of condition that indicates some delay in taking hold, even Rabbi Yossi will agree in the following case that it does not take hold immediately. For example, if a person says, I am divorcing you, l'cheshetetze chamo minartiko, when the sun rises, but literally it means when the sun comes out of its case. In other words, when the sun shines, in other words, it's right now nighttime, and someone makes a condition and says, I want this event to take hold, or I want this issue to become binding when the sun shines. So when is it going to take place? L'chi nafka ka'omar lo. He's telling her, in the case of, let's say, using a divorce as an example, I am divorcing you, or the divorce will take hold when the sun, at sunrise. So when does she get divorced? L'chi nafka ka'omar lo. When the sun rises, is what he said to her. L'chi mayas balelo, in a case like that, imagine the husband dies during the night before that sunrise. If he dies at night, get li'achar misahu, it would be considered a divorce after his death, and that's not a legitimate divorce. She is therefore considered, under those circumstances, a widow, and if they were a childless couple, and the dead husband left a surviving brother, there would be dine yibum, according to all opinions, even Rabbi Yossi. Another case, number two. He says, I'm giving you a divorce. Almenas shetetze chamo minartika. I'm divorcing you on condition that the sun rises. At what point is she considered divorced? Me achshav. She is considered divorced from right now. Me achshav ko'omar lo. He is in effect saying, I'm divorcing you right now. And the chimayis balelo, if he were to die at night, in a case that he dies during that night before the sunrise, ha vadai tenohave, this is certainly considered a simple condition in the document, in the divorce, the get mechayim hu, and the get is a divorce, it's considered a divorce while he was still alive. k'derav huna. And this is the fact that we can call this a get while he was still alive is based on Rav Huna's teaching. The Amar Rav Huna, kol ha'omer al menas, whenever someone says on condition that, k'omer me'ach shavdomi, it's tantamount to his saying from right now. In other words, I'm divorcing you right now when the sun rises. Let's take a glance at the Rashi. Me'achshav ko'omar. You'll see the Rashi in the middle of the wide lines. Me'achshav ko'omar de'lehevei gita. From right now, I'm saying I want it to be a divorce. Almenas shetiskayim tanai zeh. On condition that this condition will be fulfilled. V'chimet kayim tanai zeh. And when this condition is fulfilled, v'nafka chama, and the sun rises, igloi milsula mafreya, it becomes apparent retroactively, divishas mesira haveget, that from the point of its handing over, where the man hands the divorce document to the woman, from that point it took hold. V'afagav demayis b'leila, and even though he may die during that night, havilei get mechayim, it's still considered a divorce from the point that the husband was still alive. The kavose, and parallel to this, meis besoch yud beis chodesh, if a person had given the divorce document to her, and he says, I want this divorce to be chal from now, if I don't come within 12 months, so in the case that he dies within the 12 months, harei niskayim atanai shelo bo, the fulfillment of the condition will take place because he doesn't come back. Bavilei get the mafreya, and therefore it's considered a divorce document retroactively from the point that he gave it, and there would therefore be no yibum, because mi yibum is a halacha. The marriage of the surviving brother is true only if she's left a widow, but not if she was divorced. Lo nechluku ella, the machlokes that we referred to above between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya exists only under the following circumstances, where he says be'im teitze. In other words, this is a little bit abbreviated, but he says hareze gitech im teitze chama min artika, and he died at night. The expression of im teitze is different than the expression almenas sheteitze. So regarding this terminology, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Savar lo k'Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi that said that she is not subject to Yibum, she's considered a divorced woman, he holds like Rabbi Yosi the Omar, Zmanu Shel Shtar Mochiach Olav, the time that's written into the document is what proves its point of effectiveness. V'havile kemehayoyim imesi, kemeachshav imesi. It's as if he said, I'm giving you this divorce that it should be binding from today. That means immediately. It's like saying me'achshav imesi. It's bound from this point immediately if he dies. And therefore we say that, well, when he dies, the get is chal, takes hold retroactively from the point that he gave it to her. And how are we able to say that? That's according to Rabbi Yossi that says we base the effectiveness on the date that's written in the shtar. And since the date is written at the time the get is prepared, it's chal, it becomes binding from that original point and not later on. Therefore, if he dies later on, the get is chal retroactively, and she is not subject to yibum. The Rabbonan who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, less lehu de Rabbi Yosi, they don't subscribe to Rabbi Yosi's principle that zmano shel shtar mochiach olav, that the date is a determining factor. V'havei lei, and therefore the case of im teitze is like kezegitech im meisi greda. It's like a simple expression of this is your divorce if I die, and we know that kind of statement is not chal. The get is not chal because he's saying that it should be a divorce upon his death, and we know ain get liachar misa. At this point in the Gemara, we turn back to information that was revealed in the upper part of the Gemara. We saw a Tanaic source, and it's requoted over here. The Gemara will quote the entire source that we saw above, but we will be focusing on one of the points here, namely the issue of Ayil Kamsa. Gufa, Hayid Yosi ben Yoezer ish Treda al Ayil Kamsa Dochein. He testified that the Ayil Kamsa, a type of locust or insect, it is allowed, it is kosher. The Almashke beis mitbuchaya Dochein, the al diyikrav lemisa misav, the korule Yosef Sharia. My Ayil Kamsa, what is that? So we have two opinions. Rav Papa, we called number one, Omar Shushiva. This is a type of locust that has an elongated head. It's called Shushiva. Rabbi Chiya bar Ami Mishmei de Ula Omar Susbil. The Ayil Kamsa is a Susbil creature. The Susbil does not have an elongated head. The Torah, when it makes reference to all types of creatures that are mutter to eat and usher to eat, there are different signs that accompany different creatures. Fish have their set of signs. Animals that walk on all fours have their signs. And insects have their signs. The Gemara now goes over these opinions. We have a marking, we have a geometric form here around Rav Papa, and later, next line, Rav Chiya bar Ami. We feature this on the side as well under our Nosei Mivneh heading. You see a diamond with a colored in tip. Shtei Deois Mahu Ayil Kamsa. Sug Chagav. Two opinions as to what an Ayil Kamsa is. It's a type of Chagav, a type of locust. The Gemara now reviews the opinions with some further detail. Rav Papa Amar Shushiva. Rav Papa said that an Ayil Kamsa is a Shushiva. We mentioned a type of locust with an elongated head. The Komiflegi Barosho Oruch. And the controversy between Yosi ben Yoezer, who testifies that it's mutter, that it's allowed, and those that disagree with him, they argue concerning this characteristic. Mor Savar Rosho Oruch Osir. The Rabbanan, who did not allow the Ayil Kamsa, hold that creatures with elongated heads are forbidden. Humor Savar Rosho Oruch Mutter. And Yosi ben Yoezer holds that even though it has an elongated head, which is something that's not characteristic of other kosher variety insects, nevertheless, I allow it. That's the opinion, that's the lenient opinion of Yosi ben Yoezer. There is quite a bit of detail that accompanies this particular controversy. That is found in the Rashi. We, however, will continue with the Gemara. Reb Chiya bar Ami Mishmei De'ula Omar Suspil. He says that the Ayil Kamsa that Yosi ben Yoezer was testifying about and allowing, and we know at the same time that there are other rabbis that say it's not allowed, the controversy concerns the creature called Suspil. We mentioned that the Suspil does not have an elongated head. Berosho Oruch Kule Alma Lo Pligi Da'aser. According to this opinion, the Reb Chiya bar Ami opinion, he holds that all authorities, including Yosi ben Yoezer, would not allow a creature with an elongated head. The Hacha, the Machlokes Yosi ben Yoezer and Chachamim concerning the Ayil Kamsa concerns b'chnofav choifin es ruba ayadei adchak komiflegi. Notice how with our phrase marking we were able to read almost an entire line as one phrase. Let's do that again. Knofav choifin es ruba ayadei adchak komiflegi. This is a situation where the one of the signs of kashrus of allowance of locusts as far as the Torah is concerned is a situation where the wings surround the majority of the circumference of the body of this insect. When we talk about the surrounding the circumference, how much of the circumference? So if it's an obvious majority of the circumference, in other words, the wings cover, you know, practically the entire body of this insect, then that would be a sure sign of kashrus. There are other signs that we're not getting involved with right now. There are additional signs, but for our purposes, this is one of them. What is the going to be this, the din if the wings cover 51% of the circumference. That's called al yedei adchak. It was just barely covering the majority. It's a bare majority, namely 51%. This issue is the point of controversy. More so far, Yossi ben Yoezer, who was willing to have the suspiel classified as a kosher variety creature, when he said the ayil kamsa is allowed, and we saw that the according to the opinion of Rabbi Chiya bar Ami, the ayil kamsa is a suspiel. This is a creature whose wings cover a bare majority, namely 51%. So, Mor Sovar, Rabbi Yossi ben Yoezer holds, Ruba Kol Dehu Bo Inon. The Torah requires a bare majority, Kol Dehu, an exact majority. Mor Sovar, Ruba De Minkar Bo Inon. The Chachomim hold that the sign of Kashrus, represented by the wing circumference coverage, that's provided it's an obvious majority, something that by, without taking out a microscopic tape measure, with just by looking at it, something that's nicker, something that's obvious, a rove like that, an obvious majority is required. And hence, the suspiel, according to that opinion, would not be acceptable. The Almashka Beis Mitbachaya Dochein, one of the other issues that Yossi ben Yoezer ruled upon, was this: the liquids of the slaughtering site in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash is being Dochein. Dochi means tohor. It's an Aramaic word for tohor. If you have any trouble finding where this quote is coming from, we've provided an arrow in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara with an indication to look on Omid Aleph. So if you look to the right-hand side of the Gemara text on Omid Aleph, you'll notice toward the lower part of the page a corresponding arrow with an Omid Beis reference, and it points to the line where this expression comes from, where reference was made to the Mashke, Beis Mitbachaya, as being dochi. The title that we've assigned to this particular section of Gemara is this very point, that Mashke Beis Mitbachaya Dochein, you can see under our topic heading in the outside margin. The Gemara wants to know now, my Dochein, what is meant by the term Tohor? Rav Omar Dochein Mamish. Rav says that these liquids, the blood and the water that one finds at the slaughtering site in the Azor of the Beis HaMikdash, do not absorb ritual impurity at all. Ushmul Amar, Dochein Milatame Achirim. Dochein, as far as Shmuel is concerned, means they are tohor with respect to their ability to communicate Tumah to something else, something further on. Avol Tumas Atzmon Yesh Bohen. However, they themselves are considered Tumah. They themselves will be Tumah. Rav Omar, Dochein Mamish. Rav says that the liquids, the dam and the mayim, are mamish tohor. Kosova Rav is of the opinion, tumas mashkin de rabbonon. The whole realm of tuma affecting liquids is something that's purely rabbinic in origin. The chigozer rabbonon tuma, and when is it that the rabbonon imposed ritual impurity on liquids? Be mashkin de almo. That's in with regard to liquids in general, namely outside the Beis HaMikdash. Aval b'mashke b'beis mitbachaya lo gozer rabbonon. But with regard to the liquids found at the slaughtering site in the Azor of the Beis HaMikdash, the rabbonon did not impose their tumah. Shmuel Omar, dochein milatame achirim. Shmuel says that the tahara of the mashke b'beis mitbachaya that Yossi ben Yoezer referred to meant that the if they become tomei, if these liquids, let us say that a dead sheretz came into contact with the liquids of the slaughter site in the Azora, the liquids themselves would become tomei according to Shmuel. However, those liquids would not communicate tuma, ritual impurity, to other substances. So let's read that again. Ushmul Amar Dochein Milatame Achirim Avol Tumas Atzmon Yesh Bohen. But their own inherent tuma, or tuma that they themselves absorb, that does take hold. Kosovar Shmuel is of the opinion Tumas Mashkin De Oraisa. The Torah itself states that liquids become tomei. Letame Achirim De Rabbona. The concept of a liquid communicating tuma to something else, that's rabbinic. V'chigaz rabbanon, and when is it that the rabbanon imposed their ruling? B'mashkin de'amal, that's with regard to liquids in general. However, b'mashkin be'i midbachaya lo gazru, but as far as the mashkin, these liquids found at the slaughter site in the Azor of the Beis HaMikdash, they did not impose their ruling, and therefore, even though the mashkin themselves may have absorbed tumah, they will not be capable of communicating it to something else in the Azora. And another one of the examples or the items that were mentioned by Yosi ben Yoezer, the Al Diyikrav Lamisa Misav, the Korule Yosef Sharia. This is a perplexing expression, because if we translate it, you'll see. It says that one who is Diyikrav Lamisa, one who has contact with a corpse, Misav, he becomes Tomei, and as a result of that ruling, they called him Yosef Sharia. They called him Yosef the Lenient One. Well, that doesn't make any sense. The Gemara asks two questions. Number one, Yosef Asra Mibayalei. It should have said Yosef the Forbidding One. In other words, if you declare someone Misav, the dashed underlined word just above, Misav means tome. If you declare something tome, something ritually impure, you're imposing restrictions. You're not suggesting any leniency. So if anything, they should have called him Yosef the Forbidder, not Yosef the Lenient One, the Oid. And furthermore, De'oraisahi, this whole issue has nothing to do with some kind of ruling that involves rabbis. Contact with a corpse resulting in tumah is a Torah law, not a rabbinic law. Dechtiv, the pasuk says, v'chol asher yiga al penei hasodeh b'chalal cherev oy b'meis. It talks about, this pasuk makes reference to yiga. You see the word yiga, and it says b'meis. We've dashed underlined those two words to create a sense of immediacy of what is at stake, what's at hand. The pasuk says, if one is yiga b'meis, he becomes tamei. So the Gemara answers. Before we go further with the answers, let us take note of the geometric forms that accompany this piece of Gemara. And you can see, if your eye scans down the page, you'll notice we have some numberings in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You have 1 through 3 that appear in triangles. And we also have some diamonds that appear in the middle of the Gemara text. Let us glance at the side. First of all, we'll just review the topic heading, the nosei. Ma Omar Rabbi Yosi ben Yoezer be'inyan tumas meis. What is it that Yosi ben Yoezer ever said regarding ritual impurity in the context of corpses? And mivne, we have a structural note. These triangles that are numbered are 3 nisyonos lahasbir es Rabbi Yosi ben Yoezer uma hitir. These are 3 attempts to explain what Yosi ben Yoezer allowed. We will see also the use of some lettering here, Aleph through Gimel. Shlovim min hadoraisa ad Yosi ben Yoezer. The lettering that we will see represents some stages from the Doraisa level till you get to the Yosi ben Yoezer level. And you will notice that this lettering is found in stages. You'll see in stages 1 and 2 of the Gemara's presentation. The diamond comes to emphasize Ma Omar Yosi ben Yoezer. We want to see what is it that Yosi ben Yoezer himself said. That's what we're trying to find out. We'll also see a double underline that appears in this section of Gemara with dots in it. That double underline is designed, Havlotas Shmoish Rav Nachman. It's designed to emphasize, to bring out, to accentuate Rav Nachman's name, which will be something important in the ensuing discussion. The questions have been raised. What Yosi ben Yoezer seems to have said in the source and the resultant name, Yosef Sharia, don't seem to jive. And furthermore, the whole issue of Tumas Meis seems to be something governed by the Torah. So why are we bringing Yosi ben Yoezer into this discussion anyway? And stage 1, or answer 1, is as follows. Da'iraisa di'yikrav tomei, di'yikrav b'di'yikrav tohor. On the Torah level, one who touches a corpse will become tomei, become ritually impure himself. However, one who touches someone that touched the mace, tor, from the Torah level, that second party will be pure. The osu inhu v'gozer afilu diyikrav b'diyikrav. And then rabbis came along and made a gezerah, made a ruling that even one who touches, the one who touched the mace will be tomei. The osu ihu v'ukmo adorais. And then Yosi ben Yoezer came along and reestablished the halacha of the Torah and said only the Torah law is what is of concern to us, namely the rabbinic ruling is rescinded. The Gemara asks, "Diyikrav b'diyikrav?" This issue of a second party touching someone who touched a mace, nami d'oraisa hu. That's not a gzeira that was suggested two lines up at stage base. That is a Torah law, dichtiv. The pasuk says, "V'chol asher yiga bo hatome yitma." That means anyone that the tome touches will become tome. So if the person who himself had touched the mace, he himself becomes tome, that which he touches, that which he comes in contact with, will also become tome. So this idea of yikrav b'diyikrav, that's accounted for in this pasuk. Amrua rabbonon kamei derava mishmei derav zutra berei derav nachman, the omar mishmei derav nachman. We now are approaching stage number two in our inquiry regarding the topic of Yosi ben Yoezer and what his ruling was in the context of Tumas Meis. So the Rabbanan said over something that eventually was in the name of Rav Nachman. Doraisa, notice we have the stages alluded to using our letters. The Doraisa stage, the Doraisa level, is Diyikrav b'diyikrav b'chiburin Tumas Shiva. Shelo b'chiburin Tumas Erev. On a Doraisa level, it is true that someone who touches someone who is Tomei Mace becomes himself Tomei. But that's provided that we have the following details in place. Diyikrav b'diyikrav b'chiburin means that you have a chain. Chiburin means attached. You have a body. You have someone touching the body. We can call him Mr. One. And now have Mr. Two touching Mr. One while Mr. One is touching the body. That's called Yikrav B'diyikrav B'chiburin. What happens to Mr. Two, the person at the end of the chain? Tumas Shiva. He will become Tomei Midoraisa for 7 days. Shelo B'chiburin Tumas Erev. If you have Mr. Two touching Mr. One while Mr. One is no longer in contact with the corpse, then Mr. Two absorbs Tuma, but only till the evening. That's called Tumas Erev. In other words, if you don't have a complete chain where Mr. Two is touching one while Mr. One is touching the body, then if you don't have that, then there's only Tumas Erev for Mr. Two. The osu inhu v'gozur, the rabbis came along and made the following ruling: afilu shelo b'chiburin equals Tumas Shiva. That Mr. 2, upon touching Mr. 1, even though Mr. 1 is no longer in contact with the corpse, Mr. 2 absorbs Tuma Shiva, 7 days of Tuma. V'osa ihu v'ukma adoraisa. And Yosi ben Yoezer came along, and he was matir, he made an allowance, and said that the halacha is only according to the Torah level alone, namely, that shelo b'chiburin is only Tumas Erev. We have a bracketed section, and we have a note that accompanies these brackets, and it's found on the inside margin where we've written in that Sograyim Enom Lematras Dilug Elamasha Besoichon Muva Kareka Lemahu Doraisa. These brackets are not designed primarily for skipping purposes, but what is contained within them is background for determining what is Doraisa. And we just heard what is Doraisa, that namely that Shelo b'chiburin is Tumas Erev. After the brackets, though, this approach that was presented under number 2 will be called into challenge, and you can see if you skip the brackets momentarily, you'll see Omar Lehu Rava addresses the Rabbanon who spoke before, with our squiggle underlines, we can see this very easily. Level 2, or approach 2, attempt number 2, was presented by Amrua Rabbanon Kameda Rava. You can see that, the squiggle underlined expression, the Rabbanon said in front of Rava, and they made their presentation. At this point, the stage number 3, Rava responds to them. And that you can see where he says, Amar Lehu Rava, after the bracketed section, which is also squiggle underlined. Before we get to Rava, let's just see what is in the bracketed section. D'oraisa mahi. What is it? What is the Torah, or what's the pasuk that's relevant that to suggest that shelo b'chiburin, that Mr. 2, who touches Mr. 1, when 1 is no longer in contact with the corpse, Mr. 2 is tame only till the evening. Where do you know that from in the Torah? That's the question of d'oraisa mahi. D'chtiv. Hanoigea b'meis. Actually, before we go on in the Gemara, let us just outline the answer. The Gemara is going to present a few psukim that seem to be contradictory. The resolution of the contradiction will also serve as the answer for our question of this idea of what is the Torah level of, what is the Torah standard of Tumah when it comes to Tumas Meis. So you have a pasuk that's presented here. Dichtiv hanogea b'meis l'chol nefesh adam v'tomei shivas yomim. The pasuk indicates that one who has contact with a corpse, there's tuma for 7 days. Uksiv v'chol asher yiga bo hatomei yitma, and anyone that he touches becomes tomei. Well, who's referred to over here? The one who was just mentioned in the pasuk before, namely someone who had contact with a mace, we said he becomes tamei for 7 days, and this pasuk says that anyone that he touches also is yitma, and it's mashma, it implies also for 7 days. Using the example we cited above, we would say that if Mr. 1, who had contact with the corpse, has subsequent contact with a Mr. 2, Mr. 2 also becomes tomei for 7 days. Uksiv, and then you have another pasuk that says, Va'nefesh hanogas titmo ad ha'orev. It says that one who has contact with he who was tomei meis is tomei only until the evening. Well, that would contradict what was implied in the pasuk before. Ha'ketzad, how do you resolve these two psukim? One pasuk indicating 7 days, more specifically that Mr. 2 will be tamei for 7 days, and the other pasuk indicating that Mr. 2 is tamei only until the evening. Kan b'chiburin, kan shelo b'chiburin. If Mr. 2 is in contact with Mr. 1 while Mr. 1 is attached to the mace, is touching the mace, then Mr. 2 will be tamei also for 7 days. The pasuk that said ad ha'erev is shelo b'chiburin, where Mr. 2 is in contact with Mr. 1 but at a point in time where Mr. 1 is no longer in contact with the corpse. Armaluhu Rava. Rava says to the Rabbanon who presented stage 2 above, Lava amino luhu, did I not tell you, lo titlu be buki sriki be Rav Nachman, do not hang empty bottles on Rav Nachman. In other words, don't quote Rav Nachman as saying empty things. Rather, hachi omer Rav Nachman, Sofek tumo birshus harabim hitir lohen. Yosi ben Yoezer, when issuing a leniency, it wasn't concerning the issue of tumo b'chiburin or shelo b'chiburin. It involved, his leniency involved the case of matters of doubt concerning tumo in public thoroughfares. In other words, if one traverses a public thoroughfare and he is in doubt whether, while in the public thoroughfare, he had contact with a source of Tumah, we will rule, thanks to Yosi ben Yoezer, that he is Tohor. The Gemara asks, do I need Yosi ben Yoezer for that information? V'ha'hilchasa misoita gamrinon law. This concept of Sofik Tuma Bershus Rabim as Tohor is learned from the Parsha of Sota. Ma Sota Rishus Hayochi. Just like by Sota, her vilification or her Tuma, her state of impurity, is gained in privacy. That's the whole nature of sota. Sota is the case of the suspect married woman going off with another man. Eventually, because of our doubts, and without getting into all of the details, she is brought to the Beis HaMikdash and subjected to the water drinking test. Where does the whole issue of the sota doubt arise? That's when she's in private, namely not in public, and we know that she is considered, she's called by the Torah Tomeo. She's called a person that's Tome. So the concept of, and of course the issue of the sota is a matter of doubt. We don't know for sure. So we have a woman that experiences doubt, and she's classified as Tomeo, but where does that take place? That takes place in a Rishus HaYochid, not a Rishus HaRabim. Af Tuma Rishus HaYochid. So too the issue of stringency with regard to doubts concerning run-of-the-mill Tuma, that we will be stringent, exists only when the doubt arose in private, just like the case of the sota, not in public. So I don't need Yossi ben Yoezer to tell me that Sofek Tuma Birshus HaRabim is Torah. That I know from the Parsha of Sota. The question then is, what do I need Yossi ben Yoezer for? Ha Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha V'ein Morin Kein. It is true that Sofek Tuma Birshus HaRabim is Torah. That is true. That is determined through the Hilchisa Misota, that which we learn from an oral tradition from Sota without Yossi ben Yoezer. But it's Ein Morin Kein. Ein Morin Kein means we don't publicize it. We're afraid that if we publicize this halacha of Sofek Tuma Birshus HaRabim is Torah, people will come to be over lenient. They'll be mezalzel ba. V'yosa ihu, knows the diamond. The diamond again is an emphasis of Yossi ben Yoezer. He came along v'oyri le oroye and made it public that sofek tumav sarabim is tor. Tanya nami hachi. We have a Tanaic source supporting this. Rabbi Yehuda Omer koros noatz lohem. Yossi ben Yoezer nailed in spikes or pegs along the borders of the public thoroughfare, the Omar, and he said, Ad kan Rishus HaRabim, Ad kan Rishus HaYochid. This made it of created public awareness, created public awareness of the boundaries of the Rishus HaRabim and the private domain, the Rishus HaYochid, with this being a practical nafkamina concerning any issues of suffolk that may have arisen. You have to know where. Was it on this side of the pegs that is within the Rishus HaRabim? That would be Sofek Tohar. If it were on the other side of the pegs, serving as the boundary of the private domain, private domain, we refer to things like the fields that are alongside public roads. Those are called Rishus HaYochid because the owners of those fields don't want people trampling in them. As such, they're called Rishus HaYochid, and Sofek Tuma that arose there, doubts, matters of doubt concerning impurity there, would be viewed with stringency. Ki osu v'kamei d'Rabbi Yanai, when a person who encountered a matter of doubt of Tuma in a Rishus HaRabim, Omar Luhu, Rabbi Yanai would tell that party, you know, you ought to immerse yourself in a purification source of water to solve your problems. Ha maya b'shikaso d'b'nahara zilu tfolo. There's water in the river channel. Go and immerse yourself. What seems to be from this is that even though we have a Gemara that established Sofek Tuma Rishus HaRabim as Torah, thanks to Yossi ben Yoezer, it seems that Rabbi Yanai didn't want to take advantage of that leniency and would instruct people that encountered Sofek Tuma Rishus HaRabim to nevertheless immerse themselves. The Hashlokos, cooked up food. The Mishnah had said that concerning food cooked up by a Gentile, we call that Bishulei Nochri. It is forbidden to be eaten. It's also to eat Bishulei Nochri. Minohani Mili. From where do we know that Bishulei Nochri is Osir? Omar B'chiyo Bar Abba, Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Notice we have a a number one here, because later this will be revised. Before we go further, let's take a look at our topic headings and structural notes. First of all, on the side, the outside margin, we have something called Nosei Kloli, a general topic. Bishul Nochri, the cooking of Gentiles. And that, we've also indicated, goes till Daf Lamed Ches Amid Beis. It's a rather lengthy topic. The Nosei, Maha Mokor Le'iser Bishul Nochri. We'll be searching for the source that indicates Gentile cooking is prohibited. We also have a Mivneh. The Mivneh, we've assigned a description of this as a Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the discussion. And that will be indicated by this house form with the point fitting, the point pointing upwards. That's those are nisyonos. Those are attempts to attempts at a source. And with the house form inverted, point down, those are dechius, rejections. So the question was, where do we know Bishul Nochri as being usur? Rabbi Yochanan quotes a pasuk. Let's continue with the Gemara. Amar Kra, Oichel bekesef tashbireni v'chalti, umayim bekesef titein li v'shosisi. The Gemara feels that the food acquired from the Gentiles is to be compared to water. Kamayim. Ma mayim shelo nishtanu, af oichel shelo nishtanu. Just like water is something that doesn't change from its original characteristic, af ochel shelo nishtana, so too a food that hasn't undergone any change, to the exclusion of that which has undergone cooking. Food that undergoes cooking experiences a change. The Gemara asks, well, if the heter is based on things that have undergone no change, and only those things you can acquire from the Gentiles. So Elo Me'alta, if that be the case, chitin vason kloyos, grains of wheat that were roasted. Hachinami dasurin, are you going to tell me that they are forbidden? The chitemo hachinami, and if you say yeah, that they've undergone a change, they've been roasted, They are in fact forbidden, that's not true. V'hatanya, we have a Tanaic source that says, chitin v'ason kloyos, if you have wheat and a goy and a Gentile roasted them, mutarin, they are allowed. So we have to reevaluate the standard by which to determine prohibition. Elo, kimayim. We're going back to the pasuk that was cited by Rabbi Yochanan and says, we will compare things to water, but in the following respect. Ma mayim shelo nishtanu mi briyasan. Just like the water has not changed from its point of creation. Af oichel shelo nishtana mi briyaso. So too water, so too food items that have not undergone a change from the way they were, originally. And that's to the exclusion of something that was cooked. However, that does not exclude the grains of the wheat grains. The wheat grains, even though they're roasted, they're still wheat grains with the same form as they were when they were created. However, food that has been cooked up is no longer in the same form as it was when it was created. Elo me'ata. If this is the standard, that things that have undergone a change from the way they were when they were created is prohibited. In other words, if a gnochri changes it, mibriyasoi, that prohibits it, but that's not true. Check out the following. Chitin v'tochnon, hochinami da'asurin, wheat that was ground up by a gnochri. Are you going to tell me that's prohibited? If you say yeah, it is prohibited, but that's not true. We have the following Tanaic source: chitin vason kloyos. If you have a wheat that was roasted, hakemochim vasilta shelen mutarin. These kemochim are kemochim and siltos are the different forms of flour that was produced from them are allowed. So you see, kemochim referred to kemach. Kemach is flour. That was ground. That's nishtana b'riyosoi, and it still is allowed. Elo, stage 3, kimayim. Ma mayim shelo nishtanu mibriyoson al yideh, or just like water does not undergo any change when it's boiled up. Af oichel shelo nishtana mibriyosoi al yideh ha'ur. So to food items that as a result of their being subject to fire, to heat, do not undergo change, to the exclusion of cooking, whereby food subject to cooking undergoes its change through the ur, through its exposure to the fire. The Gemara rejects this too. Midi ur ksiv? Does the posuk that Rabbi Yochanan cites make any reference to fire? Elo, stage 4, and the final stage. This whole issue concerning Bishul Nochri is not based on the posuk whatsoever. Midi Rabbanan. It's a rabbinic prohibition, and Rashi points out we want to prohibit Jews from eating the foods prepared by the Gentiles. Rashi suggests because of he might come to feed me something unkosher. Tosfos prefers the interpretation that Rashi gave on the Mishnah, in that it will lead to actually marrying, intermarrying. And that's what the Gemara says at the top, that the whole ruling of the prohibition of Bishul Nochri is midrabbanan ukro asmachta b'yama. And the fact that Rabbi Yochanan cited a posuk at the outset, that was only a point of a reference point. In other words, the rabbis issued a ruling and say that if you want to remember our ruling, you can recall this posuk that says that only water and water-like things one can take from the Gentiles, but not literally, no literal comparisons to water. As we saw, that itself would not be successful. And the reason for the lack of success is because the posuk did not make any reference to fire per se. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.